When we were at our team meeting to plan this service, Katie asked me, well, why did you join this group, Cindy? I stopped and thought, why did I? I don't feel like I've personally been racist, but I do know that I'm a part of the white society's public policy that's brought us to where we are today with racism. For years, I've read fiction, gaining an emotional sense of the black experience and the white privilege from which I benefit. But it's been my recent reading in nonfiction that's opened my eyes as I learned the history I was not taught. The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration by Isabel Wilkerson, tells, through intimate stories, the fleeing of 6 million African Americans from the Jim Crow of the South. 6 million people who left the only place they ever knew for what they hoped would be a better life on alien soil. The Great Migration lasted from World War I to 1970 and was one of the largest internal migrations in U.S. history. As Wilkerson points out, in a just world, they shouldn't have had to uproot themselves to experience the full rights of citizenship. Birth in this country alone should have assured that for them. The realities of race and caste in the South forced them to leave to claim their citizenship. After Lydia's sermon, I read The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness by Michelle Alexander. I realized that although I might not have a personal act of discrimination I want to rectify, I am part of a society who consciously and deliberately conceived of and implements the war on drugs public policy. Racial minorities are more likely than white Americans to be arrested. Once arrested, they're more likely to be convicted. And once convicted, they're more likely to face stiff sentences. And once labeled a felon, they will be discriminated against legally for the rest of their lives with laws that operate to ensure that the vast majority of convicted offenders will never integrate into mainstream white society, cementing the segregation. From 1999 to 2005, African Americans constituted about 13% of the drug users, but they made up 46% of the drug convictions. Arrests for possession of marijuana accounted for nearly 80% of the growth in drug arrests in the 1990s. What if that had been me? If police were busting down doors at frat houses or in the suburbs, this policy would have changed. As Alexander points out, all racial caste systems, not just mass incarceration, have been supported by racial indifference, a lack of caring and compassion for people of other races. Then there were the deaths of Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Walter Scott, and Freddie Gray at the hands of police. So why do we have segregated black neighborhoods where citizens are disproportionately rounded up for drug arrest and strong-arm police tactics that result in death? In 1968, following more than 100 urban riots nationwide, the Presidential Kerner Commission reported what white Americans have never fully understood, but that the Negro can never forget, is that white society is deeply implicated in the ghetto. White institutions created it, white institutions maintain it, and white society condones it. It's easy to feel hopeless when it seems like, as a society, we're not progressing. But I'm not indifferent, and I don't condone the public policies in place that perpetuate segregation and disenfranchisement. I'll continue to educate myself about the issues affecting blacks in this country. I'm starting conversations about what I'm learning to my family, friends, and my coworkers. And I'm going to participate in actions with our racial justice task force. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Larry Lavender, and I've spent some time in jail. Buddhists assert that everything is connected: earth, air, water, fire, and the fifth element, all living creatures. Charles Darwin grasps that we are connected deeply in time to the ghosts of past species. We are connected in mortality, as John Donne told us, never to send to see for whom the bell tolls. And today, genetic scientists have sprung, have discovered that there is no genetic basis for the popular fiction we call race. We all sprang from the same African mother eons ago. All of the purported features of racial superiority are just plain cultural fiction. What we experience as racial is a cultural meme which is promulgated to keep an elite ruling class in power by creating fear and suspicion of a scapegoated group that is oppressed by the denial of civil rights, which leads to poverty, poor education, by underfunding of schools and teachers, by other political strategies, poll taxes, gerrymandering, voter suppression, by legal policies such as unjust laws like segregation or failure to enforce just laws, and by aggressive policing such as arresting for people for driving while black. I didn't meet a person of color until I was a sophomore in high school. I realized right away that the stereotype did not fit. We became fast friends, and I realized that through this relationship, not to fear other people that I had been taught to fear. In the 70s, I was doing youth ministry, retreats with the team, reaching out to young people with a message of love. And after years of doing that, an opportunity arose to bring retreats to inmates in the Worcester House of Correction. It was a difficult decision, but in the shadow of our own fears, we hoped to find connection. We hoped to find allies and to be allies. And we did, and we were. Coming of age in the 60s during the Civil Rights Revolution caused many of my generation to ally ourselves against our parents' generation and their secretive and aggressive government. We were inclined to be more suspicious of Uncle Sam than we were of our black fellow students. We knew that the police took notice of us because we had long hair and beards, and that was probable cause for illegal search and seizure and ill treatment. And they were afraid of us. In the shadow of those turbulent years, I found myself walking into a prison looking for young people who needed allies. What did I think I was doing? The surroundings were bleak. The inmates called the guards screws, and some tried hard to live up to that moniker. When we met our inmate group, it dawned on me for the first time that racism had real life consequences. 90% of our inmate friends were black or Hispanic, and only 10% were white. Not a statistic you would expect in a just society. Over time, the inmates came to trust us. We read poetry and sang songs together. Over the many retreats and years, we became friends. Jail is the bottom of the pile where all the mistakes of public policy come to rest. It is the legal limbo where our cultural fears and mistaken beliefs find expression in the lives of those without the resources to mount a legal defense. Most of the inmates I came to know were not dangerous. They got caught with pot, and they happened to be black or Hispanic. But prison is a institution that is habit-forming by design. When our friends were released, they would return, having broken parole one way or another, usually because they either did not have a family or their family didn't want them. And So they ended up with their old friends, got into their old activities, got caught again, and they were back. We came to realize that this was a problem, and the group of us that were putting on the retreats got together and had a dream of getting a halfway house together. It was called Dismas House. Over the years, we raised funds, got a mortgage for a house in Worcester, not a too fancy part of town, and we hired staff. We had some rules, and the most important part of what we did was we provided a safe place for them to be until they found a job. We helped them with that effort. We provided meals from the community once a night, every day, and people were provided with the opportunity to go to a 12-step program. That simple effort reduced recidivism by 83%. And now 20 years later, that simple halfway house dream that we had is still going strong. It's expanded into two other homes. It's the recognized halfway house thing for the state of Massachusetts. And I think one of the most thrilling parts of the whole thing is that when I was last there, allies that we found in prison were bringing meals to the new people who showed up. So we're all connected. No one stands alone. And I want you to know that if you are interested in reading the new Jim Crow book, you can see me after the service. I'm going to do a group order. We are having a group of people who are going to be doing a book study.